It is Tuesday evening. We're recording a day later than usual, but we have the full lineup here. Aaron, Jason, and myself, Rome. We're going to recap, what was it, week 11 in the NFL and week 12 in college football. If we have time, maybe sprinkle in. Oh, you know what? We will have some time. I do want to talk about that Tyson fight, some of the cards on that. And I guess if you want, Aaron, some UFC, since your steroid boy won, since he's an undisputed best fighter in the world ever. But, dude, NFL this past weekend was really intense. It was really good. Honestly, it was probably one of my favorite Sundays of the football season. I know I probably said like 4 weeks ago because that was like a fun one. I can't remember who it was. But top to bottom, aside from the Monday night game when you have Battle of Texas, which, you know, it was an ass whooping. And we'll talk about that later. But it was great games all around. We mentioned on our podcast last Thursday that these were going to be a lot of dogfights. I wanted to stay away from some of these games. And granted, you know, we did some leans. We were like on point, for instance, on Jason's Bears take. And so it was just a lot of fun. I don't know about you guys, but I had a great time. What I want to do, though, I kind of want to change it up since we're nearing like the meat and potatoes of the season, right? This is like when, you know, we're going to start finding out all the answers. I kind of want to go out over like some coach of the year finalists, some rookie of the year finalists for at least for offensive MVP finalists. I had like a few names in there that I kind of want to throw out there that maybe might not be mentioned on other podcasts or like networks. And then we can kind of go over like biggest wins, good losses. There are a couple good losses this week. And then also bone crushing losses. And I think we might have a little difference of opinion on this one because I have three out there. They're probably not three that you guys think. And then the same thing with the good losses. So which way do you want to go? Like we can start with.
So wait, you got three good losses and three bone crushing losses, right? That's like half the league.
Two good losses and three bone crushing losses.
Okay.
I will say before you get into some of this, Rome, what made some of this weekend so special. College kind of does this every once in a while, but it kind of was like rivalry to a degree because you start with, I think the game I was looking most forward to, just a football purist, is your Steelers versus the Ravens, because that's like a 3-point game every single time. You know it's coming down to the wire. You know, two stable, well-run organizations with head coaches that have been there, I think, our entire adult life. So you knew you were getting out of that game, which is then, you know, the next AFC thing, which is basically, I guess, our new Patriots-Colts rivalry with Chiefs-Bills, where you're getting Mahomes versus Josh Allen, which just, you know, lived up to the billing for what that would have been.
Yeah.
My Bears versus Packers, the oldest rivalry in football, which turned out to be a fairly, you know, close game, unlike some of the recent Bears-Packers stuff, where, you know, we'll talk more about that later. But yeah, there was some goodness to that game. And then I think even like you look at Seahawks Niners, which, you know, has a lot of history over the past decade with some of the different teams too, and what that brought to the table. So that was what I think spoke to the majority of the weekend, was like, hey, this is a bunch of rivalry stuff that there's some meaning behind this games. We're in November. This is meaningful football time. So the way the NFL has kind of backloaded some of the team schedules, where this is from here on out for the rest of the season, you're playing a lot of interdivision games, or it's some like big rivalry games that are going to have playoff implications. So I think this is where it's getting to the good part of the season now.
Good point. And like divisional games, man, those are so tough because it doesn't matter how good like the Steelers are, how bad they might be. Same thing with the Ravens. You know, that game's always going to be a dogfight. What the spread was like, 3.5 points? I'm thinking like that's way too much, man. If it was like 1.5, I would have taken it, because either way, it's always a 3-point game. It ended up being a 2-point game in that game, for instance. It was really exciting. I'll let you guys pick. Do you guys want to go over like potential coach of the year, rookie of the year, MVPs, and then we'll kind of go over the games as we go through the list, or start with the bone crushing losses, good losses, or biggest wins?
I'm curious what your bone crushing losses are, man.
Bone crushing losses? For me, there was three bone crushing losses. They could not lose this game. It was just bad for morale, bad for the season. And I think now you see this reflected on like the Vegas odds for like whether they're going to make the playoffs or not. I still have hope for just one of these teams. But bone crushing losses. We did a clip on social, right? Embrace the darkness, Jets. This was a hell of a fucking loss against the Colts. But me being a Richardson fan, I loved it. He came through. Like, this is why I was kind of fighting. Like, this is why you put the rookie quarterback, or not rookie, the young guy in there. You know, get those mistakes out. You know, pull this thing out of your ass. I fucking love him as an athlete, and I'm like really rooting for him. But the defeat on Rodgers' face, man, on that broadcast, on the team, the body language, they're just not passing the smell check, the vibe check. It is completely fucking done. And then what happened? Was it today or yesterday? Their GM just got fired. For me, like, that was like a loss of a loss. Like, that locker room is definitely 100% defeated now. No ifs, ands about it. And now what's the record, by the way?
3-8?
Yeah.
3-8. No fucking way they're going to go on a 6-game win streak.
Bro, me and Jason ripped these guys off like a month ago, dude.
Oh, no.
You should have jumped on the bandwagon, man, when that train was going.
You guys said it a month ago. It was like October 14th or something like that. I put it on the post. All right. You guys got credit. And I was like, what? No love? But that was a bone crushing loss. The two others was the 49ers losing to the Seahawks 20-17. They had to win this one. We knew that it might be a contest. Aaron, me and you, we kind of had the Seahawks as them potentially being like a wild card, a number two playoff team from this division. They have looked like shit the last 4 weeks or so. And Geno Smith, man, like, he didn't play great throughout the game, but at the end, he was really cocky, big dick on the table. He's like, yeah, we fucking rule this thing. But Niners, man, now they've lost to every team in the division, and it's not looking good for them coming out. I actually think this kind of favors Arizona coming out on top. That might be my pick. We can talk about that later. And the last bone crushing loss is the Cincinnati Bengals. I mentioned a few weeks ago on like the coaching hot seat, Zach Taylor's on it. You guys were talking shit on me, but I think it's fucking hot right now. I think it's really hot. Joe Burrow having an MVP year. Statistically, he's the best quarterback right now in the NFL. Jamar Chase might be the triple crown winner. You know,
not clown.
Receiving yards, he's not a clown. You know, Burrow's just placing that thing right in his hands. There was an opportunity that he was open at the end to kind of win this game for the Chargers, but Burrow was getting hammered by the Chargers defense. They finally woke up in the last 5 minutes of that game. It was really intense. We've seen these Chargers before. They blow these games. And we've seen these Bengals before. They're up. They come back. They roared back. But, you know, field goals, man. This weekend, Sony missed field goals. The Bengals missed it. It was wide left. I thought he made it, actually. And it was just like over the pole. But Chargers coming out, this Harbaugh team, this, you know, they're just vibing, right? They really needed this. You know, they've beat up a lot of cupcake opponents so far. They really need to beat up a good team. And the Bengals, in my opinion, this might be like the best 4-7 team in the history of football. Like, they're a really good team. It's just that their record is just not that great. So Zach Taylor's on the hot seat. So those are my three bone-crushing losses.
I would say that the Bengals would be the only bone-crushing loss of the weekend. Get your point with the other two. But Aaron mentioned him and I wrote off the Jets weeks ago.
Yeah, fair.
The Robert Saleh firing looks like it was even worse doing that, because they have gotten so much worse since they fired him. So what good that has done is actually made them worse for whatever they were trying to accomplish this season. So I think that it was a bad loss. I think for you, it's more like you liking Anthony Richardson, him being able to do something in there. So I think the Jets, their season was already done.
This is the nail in the coffin, though, right?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. I mean, the nail's been there. I think we're on the third nail at this point. The Niners game, not a great loss, obviously, but they're 5-5. The division's basically 5-5, except the Cardinals at this point. Are they 6-4, Aaron?
Yeah, they're 6-4.
So they're still a game back in the division. It's a tight division race, not a loss you want to have inside the division, but they still have, there is some hope in San Francisco. The Bengals, they have the best offense in football. You say they're the best 4-17. They're the best offense in a 4-17, but their defense is so bad that is taking a historic offense not to the playoffs, and they should have won this game. if you look at the Chargers side, this is a game the Chargers always would have lost. Always would have lost.
For sure, yeah.
It was priming up to be one of those times that, you know, many Charger friends that are friends of mine that I have are like, this would have been the ultimate scenario where the Chargers blow it. This is the different culture that Jim Harbaugh has brought to this team and why they won this game. So out of your three, I would say the true bone crushing rest of the Bengals, because their season, their playoff chances are very, very slim now. It is, I don't know, it's not completely extinct, but it's
Aaron's all, like, they're done.
Yeah. I think Vegas might have them less than 5%, I think, probability at this point making the playoffs, but it's not looking good for them.
We can kind of take a look at the AAC picture later on. I'm still giving them a shot, you know, like that bottom Rome, seven.
I ripped the Bengals off, 2 weeks ago, I think?
You did a long time ago as well, yeah.
And I told you last week the Chargers would put the nail in the coffin and finish them for good. They did.
You did say
they're
that.
Done.
Yeah.
They're done.
Yeah.
I think there were two bone-crushing losses.
He's telling you to go back, find the clip, and post that.
I will go find the clip. Yeah, I'll go find the clip. You know,
don't go back to preseason stuff where we lost some stuff. In the middle of the road season, me and Jason have been hitting. We've been hitting on all cylinders. Before, I don't even want to go back and look at that.
Oh, we will go back because I'm hitting on a lot of those. So yeah. I'm looking pretty good.
But I'll agree, Rome. I the 49ers was a bone-crushing loss. And to make things even worse, I think every loss they've had this year is bone-crushing. If you look at it, I mean, the Kansas City Chiefs lost, they lost Ayuk for the season. And then, you know, what's going to go on with Bosa? You know, they said it's a hip, but he said it's really oblique. That's about a 4 to 6 week heel time. He had to pull himself out of that game in the second half. And then Seattle got the momentum and got back in that game.
Yeah, when Bosa was out, they averaged, I think 2 yards
they
of play
when
he was
when
in.
Bosa was in the game.
Yeah.
And then Geno Smith, when he got pressure, just kept running and running it. They had no spy. They didn't adjust. That last drive, he looked like Justin Herbert there on Sunday Night Football running freely there.
He did.
49ers. I mean, I'm looking at their schedule, man. It's so brutal.
It's tough.
They've got Green Bay, Buffalo, Chicago, Rams, Miami, Detroit, Arizona. I'm going to say it right now, Rome, so it's on record. The 49ers are not making the playoffs.
Really?
They're not making the playoffs. I'm going to go on record right now.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at their schedule. I think, like, Packers, that's a toss-up. That's going to be really hard. Luckily, the Packers are not at Green Bay.
At Buffalo. That's their next two games.
But luckily, Green Bay is not playing well right now. Bills, that's a tough one. They're due for a stinker set. That's possible. But the way the 49ers are playing, highly unlikely. Bears, that's looking pretty good now. That might be a win. You think they might split the Rams. They lost the first one. Maybe they win the second one. Dolphins, I don't think they were a playoff team to begin with. They are playing better with Tua, but maybe that's a win, right? It's definitely in there. It's in the bag. Lions, which Lions team is going to come? You know, like, they're on a fucking mission right now. Like, they're destroying teams left and right. So that's probably looking like a loss. Cardinals played them tough the first game. So, you know, I only count four wins guaranteed. That puts them at 9 wins. And that's pushing it. So, not looking good for the 49ers.
No, man, that schedule's brutal, dude. It's brutal.
So, we can go to, like, good losses, if you guys want. So, good losses. I have the Patriots in there. Drake May, he's the real deal, man. I'm really digging him. They have to be, like, that's probably the only thing that they could probably be really happy about. I'm trying to pull up the game right here. I can't find it. Patriots.
Yeah, they lost.
Dude, what week?
They lost 28-22, and I agree with you, Rome, when you talk about good losses for them, because you're finding out Drake May should be your franchise quarterback here in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years, whatever it could be. At the same time, yes. You're losing the game, so you're going to get a better draft pick to really build for the future, knowing the Patriots over the past couple seasons have been really void of, you know, skill position players and just a lot of weapons around them. So, hey, we figured out the quarterback. He's doing some good things. We see a lot of progress. You know, we lost. Not great for this season, but, yeah, you're setting yourself up for some better draft capital here in the offseason for the Patriots.
I'm not really sold on the coach, you know, on Mayo being the coach for the Patriots. Just a lot of things are kind of wonky, but what they're doing with Drake May, at least now, he kind of missed out the first 6 games. But what they're letting him do and is kind of like grabbing things by the ropes is kind of like what you wanted I would say Caleb Williams to do, right? Kind of use that athleticism, make those mistakes. He has a rocket arm. Like, let him rip. Let him make mistakes. Get those interceptions. It's not a big deal. It's all about growing, learning things, like knowing what's possible, knowing the weapons that you got. So they almost pulled it out. Stafford lights out, 4 touchdowns, almost 300 yards, killing it. So for me, that was a good loss.
Agree, man. Patriots, looking at it, that's the only good loss I see on the schedule this week.
I only had 2 good losses. And the second one would be the Chicago Bears. New offensive coordinator, new play calling. I thought this is the most fluid Caleb Williams has looked. He released the ball, what was like 2.6 seconds. Best in the NFL this weekend. He scrambled, got out of the pocket, threw some balls down the field. Hell of a fucking 2-minute drive where that was at the end of the game to put them in position to kick the field goal. We can criticize the coaching and some of the stuff if you guys want to go into that a little bit. I'm more worried about the Packers of how they looked in this game. They didn't look really sharp. Love is an interception machine. They look really sloppy. Hell, they look better with Willis so far this year. But Bears came out to play. I thought they looked really good. I thought they looked really good. And granted, that block heard round the world. It was fucking epic. It was pretty epic. Jason, I'm really curious to see how you feel. I've already seen it all over Instagram. Like, a lot of Chicago Bear fans are like really pissed or disappointed. There's like a little kid crying. It's like, dude, like, I feel so bad. But I thought this is what you want to see. You want to see a really competitive Bears team. And against like a juggernaut, I guess, if that's what you want to call the Packers, pretty good loss. Lots of progress in this first game with a new offensive coordinator. They finally looked alive, and they haven't looked alive since, 3 weeks.
Yeah, if you want to talk positives out of the game with new offensive coordinator and had an actual, you know, strategy scheme that was equaling his play calling on how to maximize the talent on offense that the Bears do have. Yeah, that was the big positive. So Thomas Brown, the new offensive coordinator, there was a lot of things he did well to give Caleb time for, you know, quick passes. There was things in the running game. Aaron and I have talked about the way they run the ball inside. You saw very distinctive drives with Roschon Johnson in the game that was taking it to the Packers up the middle, but then also, you know, spelling him out and let DeAndre Swift have some things to the outside and keeping the Packers guessing on, you know, where this ball was going to go, how it was. There was design runs or options with Caleb Williams to use his athleticism. So that was out there as well. And then the way they spread the ball around, you know, Kmet, Dunze, Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, like Swift, everyone was getting the ball, you know, and I think specifically over the last 3 games where the offense has been nowhere, Kmet was like one of the biggest things. You have a mismatched tight end that's really good, and then obviously DJ Moore with his athleticism. So you got them involved. So that's all the positives. Now, the negatives is the...
Let's hear it real quick.
He's going to hear him real quick. The negatives overall is just everything from this Washington loss, but even the entire Matt Eberflus era. So I brought this up after the Washington loss. And so I let me consult the stats on this because several times it was brought up on Monday. So this is now the 6th loss in the Matt Eberflus era. So I'm going to cite 6 games for you, Rome. So the Lions in 2022, at one point, the Bears had a 95.2% chance to win. They lost. The Broncos in 2023, the Bears had a 98.1% chance to win. They lost. The Lions last year in 2023, they had a 98.2% chance to win. Loss. Browns last year, 91.3% loss. The Commanders game, the Hail Mary play, they had a 96.4% and loss. And the Packers, not in the 90s, but this was a 71.3% chance to win and loss. To lose all 6 of these games over this period of time in the Eberflus era is like a 0.0000001% chance of happening. But this isn't just bad luck. There's tons of things in game management and decisions that are going into. So let's just take this year, the Hail Mary. We talked about it. The play before the Hail Mary, they decided to let Jaden Daniels get out, get a completion, get out of bounds, and made that a throwable Hail Mary. The play before the blocked field goal, the Bears had 30 plus seconds on the clock, and they decided, we're just going to stop and sit right here. So every Bears fan knows, so I'm going to go to my kicker, Cairo Santos, one of the most accurate kickers in league history. However, does not have a strong leg. But he is money on basically anything under 50%. So GetUp had this stat, which I saw the next morning of. So field goal percentages for Cairo Santos, he's 100% in field goals under 40 yards, 70 for 70. But from 45 plus, he's 32 of 42. And then, so he's not good from distance. He just doesn't have the leg. And when you saw his earlier field goal in the game, it's a low line drive, and the Packers players talked about it. So to me, this is coaching and Eberflus, you know, not recognizing that either of these plays before disaster happens played into the final result is exactly like the point. And then to contrast, and I'm going to bring up the bad loss of the Bengals. Jim Harbaugh for the Chargers was in a similar position at the end of that game, and he ran the ball, and the Chargers ended up scoring a touchdown. But the whole reason Eberflus was risk-averse on this was because he was scared of a fumble, which the odds of a fumble, back citing that GetUp stat that they put, a 0.46% chance that a fumble would occur in that time. So
that was a little different. Like the Charger game, though, like once they picked up those two plays, those 20-plus yards, then that game was over. They could have kicked the field goal, win it by three, right? And then they had that long run, scored a touchdown, game over. I mentioned this, though. Like, there's a few coaches that have done this. It's not just Eberflus, where I've talked about this even just a few weeks ago. Denver Broncos against KC. They had a lot of extra time, and they just took their sweet fucking time. And this is where I'm thinking, like, what happens? Like, we don't go for touchdowns anymore. We always settle for field goals, and you guys defended. I think it was more Aaron defended.
Well, that was,
you
know, that Sean was a Payton. That was a 33-35-yard field goal. Same shit, I don't have a problem with that.
Same shit. No,
and
yeah.
And their kicker can make from 50.
You didn't have a problem because you like Sean Payton.
No,
and we're just
I don't have a problem.
The same thing
man.
That a lot of these other coaches are doing. So I'm going to defend Eberflus a little bit and play devil's advocate.
Eberflus was a fool, man. Like
thing.
Jason said, he was a fool right there not to go for that.
Absolute fool.
They sat there. The team was lined up, ready to run a play. They sat there, looked to the sidelines. Nobody gave a call. Even the announcers are like, what are the Bears doing? They're just going to sit on it? They sat on it, and like Jason said, they got what they deserve, a blocked field goal. Yeah,
100%. Yeah. And the indifference, and I'll cite Kyle Brandt from the NFL Network, noted big Bears fan too. And he, Monday after the game, reflected on this stuff. And for Bears fans, I'm not even angry. And he said this, he's indifferent to this now because you knew it was going to happen. The same way I knew in 2018 when the double doink happened is like, it's the same coach in the same situation. And I know we're getting
remind me the double doink.
I mean, it's just the same thing. All I know is pain when it comes to this stuff, Rome. So now the indictment of Eberflus to me, another stat right. That was on, I'll cite Aaron Lemming on X for this one too. He had a stat put up of active NFL coach head coach records in one score games. Matt Eberflus is not only the bottom coach at 5-17 in the league, like there's not a coach within 20% of that one score game record. And to me, that speaks to you and your in-game management, your preparation, and how are you going to come down into crunch time to making decisions. And I know we're beating the dead horse in my monologues of the Chicago Bears, but the turning point of the season was that Commanders game, and that the Bears shut down Jaden Daniels and really took the wind out of his sails for the MVP. And because of coaching decisions toward the end of the game, they lost, and the season has been a loss ever since.
Well, you know, for them to like give up after the Hail Mary, that I don't know what that says about the whole team. You know, a lot of teams have defeating losses, but
it's not even giving up. But you can cite the coaching and the offensive coordinator, and that just speaks to the indictment of the way Shane Raldon is running it, and you know what needed to be done from a strategy standpoint. But the bigger thing for Eberflus, beyond all the negative stuff here, as a person who and their day job does, you know, leading people and hiring and stuff like that, as the head coach and you're the CEO football person within this locker room, your job is to hire people. And now he has fired two offensive coordinators in 3 years. The guy he fired last year already got fired from the Raiders. And there was other assistants that were dismissed or fired within the last 18 months to 2 years as well, too. So his record as, hey, I'm the leader, I'm the CEO of this football operation, doesn't speak volumes there either.
Yeah, I think the stat that you're looking for, I have it right here, if I can find it. I think it's like 15 of his last 22 assistant coaches have either been fired or let go in the last 18 months. I have to find it. It's around that number.
Yeah. So it's either him or the bigger indictment of Chicago Bears fans is the ownership group.
That's definitely part of the problem.
Because yeah,
that's also part of the problem.
Yeah. So it was brought up.
It's a lot, man.
I don't know if this is true or not, but I don't ramp to this. It came up about Cliff Kingsbury because he interviewed for this job. The rumors came out this week that Kingsbury wasn't considered or hired because he was a too big a personality inside Hallis Hall. And then with Harbaugh's, success this week, Ryan Poles, the GM, was asked in the end of the year press conference when the Bears came back with Poles and Eberflus, and Poles said, Eberflus is my guy for next year. A reporter asked Poles exactly, did you talk to Jim Harbaugh? And he's like, no, we haven't talked to him. And to me, if I'm reading into that, is that Harbaugh is a bigger than life personality too. He wants total control.
Oh, yeah.
And there is a, I don't know if it's a cowardice or anything when it looks to the person, which is the McCaskey family running this organization, is they would rather just hire nice people that, you know, do things the right way and all this stuff versus like, hey, I'm going to interview and find the best person for this job and lead this organization. And they haven't shown the willingness to do that.
Yeah. I made a point a couple of weeks ago when like, yeah, they are afraid of a brand being bigger than the Bears. So, you know, it is what it is. We're going to move on.
Yes, please.
Love the Bears monologue. Appreciate it, Jason. Thank you so much. So we did the losses out of the way. Biggest wins. I think I'm stuck on this Bears stat right here.
Going to send me more crying 3-year-old Bears fans.
Dude, that one was really sad. It really made me sad.
Kid, it should be child abuse that they're allowing kids to be Bears fans.
Yeah, I posted a video of my daughter in a Steelers uniform, and I had some Raven fans message me saying it was child abuse. And I was like, we're doing a public service. We're picking up dead Ravens off the side of the road. I didn't say that until after the game, but I don't want to jinx my team. Biggest wins, I would say Eagles. Definitely up there. I guess the Commanders, we talked about it last week. Money. They're flying high. Seahawks. We talked a little bit about the game. That's a big fucking win. It keeps them in line with the race for the division. Colts. I've liked them from the beginning of the year. I think they're a fun team to watch. Really good defensive players. Some of the guys, you know, lead the league in pressure and sacks. Richardson, an enigma right now. Big question mark, but I thought it was a really big win. And it keeps them alive in that division, especially as, you know, Texans, you know, fell off a little bit. On top of that, my Steelers. That was a big, big win. Russell Wilson did not play a good game at all. It was pretty bad. There was some nice, you know, deep moon balls in there. Ravens with the Tucker missing a couple field goals. It was just a weird game. TJ Watt, who, in my opinion, should be considered in the MVP conversation. When he's on the field, he changes the whole dynamic of how that defense runs and offenses and Lamar Jackson, whatever it is that the Steelers have, they have that kryptonite.
Lamar Jackson.
Yeah. What I say?
I swore you said Omar, but we can move on.
Nah.
I mean, it is Baltimore centric. We're talking about The Wire and Baltimore. We're talking about Omar coming, but you know.
When you said Omar, I did think about The Wire. I was like, The Wire, like, I'm really bad with names on that show. That was a good show. And then biggest win, Bills. Finally giving America the gift that we deserve, the gift that we've been asking for almost a year with the Chiefs going down. That run on 4th-and-2, 26 yards out, him tucking that ball. Not even tucking, that shit was fucking freely. That guy has like crazy grip, bouncing off defenders, boom, 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 into the fucking end zone. Epic, epic fucking play. And now probably leading the MVP conversations. But that those are my biggest wins of the week.
It's a good list, Rome. I mean, there's a lot of teams with great wins this week. I think you left off one, and it's my biggest win of the week. Chargers. We talked about the Chargers, Jim Harbaugh, and that stepping up and bringing the Chargers to relevancy. You know, we like Jason mentioned, this is a game the Chargers would guaranteed lose. Guaranteed. They got the best from the Bengals, a team that was desperate, a team that's every game's a playoff. This was the Bengals Super Bowl. They bounced back down 21, looked like they were going to take it from the Chargers. The Chargers responded on the last drive, 4 plays, 82 yards and 45 seconds to win the game. I think this showed me that the Chargers, not only for real, they're a threat to get to the Super Bowl now out of the AFC. That's the biggest win of the week for me.
Yeah, it definitely keeps them up, and it puts a little pressure on the Chiefs. You got to imagine the Chiefs might lose another game or two before the year's over, and if Chargers can keep it going, put some pressure up. But yeah, for sure, you're right. That was definitely a hell of a week. Did I miss anything else?
I agree with Ryan on the chart. I'm sorry. I agree with Aaron. I don't know why I said Ryan. I agree with Aaron. I agree with Aaron on the Chargers, but I also...
It was Raj.
It was Raj. Yeah, it threw me off.
He's our engineer guy.
agree with Aaron on the Chargers, but the Bills, to your point, it means something, but at the same time means nothing. It means something.
It really means nothing. Yeah. Yeah.
It means something because, man, this is the team that the Bills need to beat to get to the next level, to get to the Super Bowl. But they've done this in the regular season before. It only matters what happens in January at this point.
You know, I was surprised there's no weird ref calls this past game with the Chiefs. It was the first game all year. We've got like a fair game. Chiefs look good too in the first half. I'm like, great. It's the first game that they actually look like a Super Bowl contender. I was getting really fucking nervous, but no ref interference. Bills come out. They win it fair and square. I loved it. It was a good game. Finally.
The AFC playoff picture is going to be real tight. You know, your Steelers, the Bills, the Chiefs, Aaron's throwing the Chargers hat in the ring too. So you got a lot of teams going for that number one seed. I don't think there's anyone that can far and away. The Bills got a fairly tough schedule to be able to go out and try to get a game back on the Chiefs. You know, if lucky for them, their division isn't very good for the most part at this point, but there's going to be some tough games ahead. You know, the Steelers and Ravens are going to have another matchup. I know the Ravens are going to be coming out looking for that one because they're probably going to need it at this point because you look at the, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 at the bottom of the AFC. These teams need to keep winning games. So it's going to be a very competitive, and all these big wins you mentioned were huge for these teams separating themselves into the, you know, the next level of playoff contention.
Yeah, I always guarantee at least splitting the games for the Steelers is just my go-to when I'm calculating wins. So if they can split the rest, that puts them right at 10 wins at the very least, right? And gives them a little wiggle room for the rest of the season. But I think the AFC playoff picture is more or less kind of like locked in. You know, Chiefs, Chargers, Steelers, Ravens, Texans, I would kind of be careful. Colts might come in and give them a little scare. And then you got the Bills.
No, Colts aren't getting in there. They already beat them twice for the division. So yeah. I don't see the Colts getting in there.
Texans got the 3-game lead. It could be locked. What you're looking at probably is going to be only at the 7 with the Broncos at 6-5 right now. You know, do the Dolphins have it in them to make a push here at the end? They're only 4-6. They're only 4-6 right now when you have a 6-5, you know, Denver team. So if the offense is clicking for the Dolphins, like they still have it in there. Your Colts are kind of there at 5-6 potentially go in. So I think it's only the Broncos kind of shaky at the 7 seed right now that we're probably up for grabs
for sure
when you're looking at it. But it's, you know, Aaron's declared the Bengals done. We've all declared the Jets done. So really you're looking at Broncos, Colts, Dolphins, 3-way race for the 7th seed, you know, and that's all we're looking towards the end of the AFC playoff picture.
Well, I need the Dolphins not to make the playoffs to make my preseason prediction come true. At least one.
At least one. That. I mean, Dolphins, what do they got looking at their schedule?
I just don't
got New England, at Green Bay, Jets, Houston.
So they're on a 2-game winning streak.
It's going to be tough for the Dolphins, man. Not having two of there for like 6 games really hurt them. Broncos, I like what the Broncos are doing. Colts, too much inconsistency. I think Denver's playing the best of the best coach team of those 3 groups. They got the best defense of those teams, too. Broncos likely get in.
Cool. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about MVP, Coach of the Year, odds. All right. we're at a good point. I think now is a good of a time as ever to kind of come up with a finalist, leading candidates for MVP, Rookie of the Year, and at least Coach of the Year. So which one do you want me to go off first?
Start at the top. Let's go MVP.
MVP. So with that victory, the Bills over the Chiefs, Josh Allen, in my opinion, has to be leading the MVP race. Next, I have Lamar Jackson at second. If you compare his stats this year to last year, here he has 24 touchdowns, like two interceptions. Last year, he barely had like 10 touchdowns at this mark. You know, he has 2,600 yards. Last year, he only had barely over 2,000. I think Jared Goff should be strongly considered for the MVP as well. He's been lights out. He's a fucking machine. I don't know so much if it's like the system. He has all the weapons. Either way, getting over 400 yards and over four touchdowns multiple times in your career, let alone in a season, should garner you some MVP votes. He's playing really good, really smart football. Take away that five interception game. I know that kind of docked him down a little bit. But other than that, though, it's been really good. And now here are some other ones that I think should be considered in the MVP race. Derrick Henry. Without Derrick Henry, Lamar Jackson's not having the year he's having. And honestly, the Ravens, they kind of shoot themselves in the foot by not sticking to their game plan of what they've been known for, right? Pounding the ball, run game, then pass second. They kind of fucked themselves over. But Derrick Henry should be in that conversation, as well as Saquon Barkley. I think he's transformed the way the Eagles look. And if Saquon doesn't get people fired from the Giants, then I don't know what will. I'm assuming some heads are going to roll at the end of this season. And then TJ Watt, as I mentioned earlier, should be in the conversation. I would say Hutchinson if he was still playing, because that defense is on a whole nother level when he's in there. So much more pressure, so many more sacks. But the Steelers, man, without TJ Watt, they are just not the same. He's kind of like a small guy. When you're watching them, they're like double, triple teaming him. He's still finding a seam, still finding like a little juke move, a little post up to kind of break through and like get to the quarterback. And it's really impressive. Without that pressure from him, it lets the other defensive ends, you know, pressure on the other side or like cause the quarterback to make mistakes. But for me, those are the only guys that should be considered in the MVP, you know, conversation at this point.
Yeah, I think the bias of MVP always going to go to the quarterback. So I don't think you're going to see TJ Watt, not Derrick Henry or Saquon. I think if you're comparing those two guys, Saquon to me has been probably more impactful for making Jalen Hurts look better and the extra level that the Eagles offense has kind of stepped up this year with Saquon being in the mix. So I think he's probably, to me, running back of the year, even though Derrick Henry's had more yards. But I think what he's been able to provide the Eagles has been more impactful so far from a value standpoint. To the quarterbacks, I think you listed it, by the way, the odds makers are doing it right now. Josh Allen plus 150 on MGM and DraftKings. So the leader in the clubhouse for MVP. If they're going to end at the top of the AFC, I think it's his to lose at this point. That Brode is ahead over the next couple of weeks. Lamar, you just mentioned plus 200 where he's burned at. You know, depending, I think, how they finish the season. If they're struggling to get in, they lose to the Steelers again, and where that road ends. At this point, I don't see any reason why this wouldn't be just the two-man race between Josh Allen and Lamar for that role and who's going to really lead this tougher conference. Goff, you mentioned the five-interception game. You know, he has had a good season besides that one, but I don't know if he's going to get that love for, hey, he's the reason that the Lions are kind of where they're at, where Josh Allen, what we kind of questioned with him losing, you know, is the wide receiver and the weapons, and he's kind of built more. He's going to get that nod and that love for that MVP vote this year if he's able to see this Bills team through to be a top two seed in the AFC.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Josh Allen, what he's doing with the limited weapons he's had, and a lot of these guys have missed games too.
Yeah,
Coleman, Kincaid both missed against the Chiefs. I mean, this second game, Coleman's missed. Shakir's missed a couple games. Cooper's, you know, came over in a trade, missed a game. You know, that's one of the reasons why I wasn't high on the Bills. You know, new defense coordinator. They lost basically their whole secondary from last year. Main linebacker, Milano, was out for the season, basically. Might come back later on. New only one wide receiver on the roster with over 40 catches, I believe, in a season with Buffalo coming in. So there wasn't a lot to like about Buffalo, but what Josh Allen's done there is pretty incredible. If I was given the MVP, I would give it to Saquon Barkley. I think what he's done with Philadelphia without him, they're at 5-5 team at best right now. You know, he saved him early in the year in New Orleans. He saved him against the Packers. He got the big runs against Washington. They got that game in control. To me, I would put him up there.
He's one for them for sure.
Definitely. I think his impact there, like Jason mentioned, for Jalen Hurts has helped. And that defense, too, has turned it around. But just what he's done, his explosiveness has really helped them out a lot. So for me, the top two guys are Barkley and Allen. And Lamar Jackson, if he gets hot and he wins out the rest of the way and puts up some big numbers, maybe he can get in there and they can sneak a one or two seed. But those would be my two top guys, followed by Lamar at three.
Awesome. Rookie of the year. I think it's a two-man race now. I got number one, Jaden Daniels still. Slim margins. He's had a couple of rough weeks, but what rookie is not going to have one, right? But still solid numbers. But Bo Nix, Aaron mentioned before this season, I think me and you, Jason, we had a couple of laughs. Like Aaron said that this guy's the next Drew Brees. And we're like, what the fuck are you talking about? Well, you know what? Bo Nix is looking really good. I think he's a lot stronger than people think he is. His accuracy, his arm strength, his pocket awareness. He wasn't going gangbusters in the first few weeks. You only threw like 20 or so times. There's a few games that Sean Payton was just kind of letting him go through the ropes, making those mistakes. They lost a few games. But at the end of the day, like that performance that they did this past game, I'm still looking at this Lions score right now because that was really impressive. We didn't really talk about that game, but I really enjoyed watching that Lions just destroy the Jags. It was just a thing of beauty. And that's why I think Goff, man, that's, you got to put him in the MVP conversation. Like kicking teams' asses by like 30 plus points is pretty impressive. But Broncos here, 38-6 against the Falcons. Like, who would have thought?
Yeah, it was a big disappointing loss for the Falcons, but I know we're not talking about that right now, but I won't make it a point going forward. We don't disagree with Aaron when he's talking about his love for Sean Payton and his ability to evaluate talent where things are at. A lot of talent evaluators out of college were saying out of this QB class, which was, you know, very deep with tons of talent, that Bo Nix was going to be the most pro ready. I heard a lot of that, I think, coming out of there. Now, I think he was in college for 5 or 6 years or whatever it was. So he definitely had that experience. But there was a lot of talk like, hey, this guy's going to be the most pro ready. And he's gone into these different offenses and colleges. And Sean Payton knows what he wants and is going to get the most out of the quarterback. And early on, you know, Bo Nix wasn't doing a ton. But as he's gotten more comfortable in the offense and, you know, been able to, you know, move the ball around and, you know, really put up some big games and spread some different weapons. Yeah, he's really come alive. With that said, though, I don't think there's any way this doesn't go to Jaden Daniels at this moment. They were crowning Jaden Daniels, I think, through the first month of the season.
I was.
And yeah, you were. Many others were, too. I would have said if the Bears would have followed through on their loss, because they did not. That was the first game that maybe Jaden Daniels looked, you know, human at that point. But this Hail Mary now lives in infamy for how bad he was the rest of that game. And then since then, you know, with the success, particularly that the Commanders are having in the NFC East, hey, he's leading this team to a division title. Bo Nix probably squeaks into the wild card at this point with the Chargers and the Chiefs being above ahead in the division. So I think that's where Jaden Daniels is going to have this thing sewn up. But I think Bo Nix definitely making a strong second half push for the award.
Yeah, he's 20 for 33, 307 yards and 4 touchdowns in that game. That's Goff numbers. That's Burrow numbers. That's Mahomes. As much as I hate Mahomes, that's the kind of efficiency you see from a seasoned veteran. You're right. There was there was someone on Atlanta's team that was a reporter asked him, like, how are you going to prepare to face Bo Nix for the first time? And I can't remember who it was, but he's like, the guy's already 36. He was in college for 10 years. We have plenty of film on him. It was really funny. It made a lot.
They obviously didn't study the film because they got schooled.
But yeah, really impressive. So, rookie of the year. By the way, man, quarterback class, this is going to go down. It's like the 2000 year, right? That class is pretty deep. Got Bo Nix, Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, Drake May. We haven't even seen JJ McCarthy yet, and we haven't seen Penix out of Atlanta. So potentially six quarterbacks with the 2000 class. You got, that's half the NFL for the next 10 years. It's pretty crazy.
You mentioned, you know, Penix. I was kind of thinking, it's like, is it time to see Penix? Then I was going through some stats as we were having this MVP conversation. Do you know Kirk Cousins is number 3 in the league in passing?
Yeah.
I was like, give it to that guy. He always secures the bag, and he's getting his stats, even though this team, to me, is massively underachieving right now.
Well, he looked bad this past weekend. He had, like, what, a buck 50?
Yeah, Bo Nix and Denver schooled him.
Yeah,
man, Jaden Daniels, I think right now he's the front runner, but he doesn't have it locked in the bag. If you would have said this 2-3 weeks ago, I would say, yeah, but I think his number's declining, kind of conceived with the fact that he hurt his ribs. You know, after that rib injury,
good point.
He hasn't really been the same. Doesn't look like he's running. Doesn't look like he's moving as good. He's kind of, his accuracy's been off a bit.
That's right on the podcast, Aaron.
Rib injuries, never had one personally myself, but I hear they're very uncomfortable.
They're very uncomfortable.
So I think that as we're seeing his numbers dip, and obviously the competition too. I mean, Bears defense is very good. The Eagles defense has now stepped up to be, you know, one of the better defenses in the NFC and the NFL right now over the last 5 weeks. And Nix, man, he's getting better. He started the year at Seattle with Pittsburgh, two teams. He threw a couple interceptions, kind of turned the corner once they went into Tampa and the Jets and won those games. If Nix can get this team into the playoffs, they're what, 6-5. If he can get to 10-7, 11-6. He may have a chance to wrap this thing up and get in himself. I don't think it's a lock.
They are a lot like the Colts. They're pretty shaky, very inconsistent, tough end of the season schedule. So who knows? But even so, I might owe you, Aaron, an apology on the Michigan take and on the Broncos take and on the Sean Payton take. But we'll see.
Sean Payton, man. Quarterback whisperer, dude.
I don't like him. I don't know. Something about him. Fucking smug. Just want to slap him.
If Bo Nix, you know, Jason had said that Bo Nix was the most NFL ready, which he was. I think he had like 65 career college starts, most of any Division I college quarterback ever. But he got the right guy, Sean Payton, man. If he would have went somewhere else, he'd probably be struggling. Probably like 10 touchdowns, 15 interceptions, and people be saying you can't draft these guys that have played 30 years in college. Instead, he went to the quarterback whisperer, Sean Payton, and he's making me look smart for once.
Yeah, if they're able to turn this around, man, that division's going to be really tough. Chiefs are going to be around for a while. Chargers are now up and coming. Broncos are now possibly up and coming. Raiders, feel bad for them, man. Feel bad for them. Not really, but kind of. All right. We'll do some Coach of the Year really quickly, wrap this up before we go into some college football talk and then whatever games we got to cover. But this was kind of like a tough list to put together because we have some really great coaching performances this year. Top of my list is Mike Tomlin. I don't like jump on my team and hand them accolades, and I know I've done this on some of these lists, but I think this is Mike Tomlin's like best coaching year to date, the way he's handled. Even bringing in Fields for like some plays, you know, just Fields has that locker room, but still bringing in, you know, Mr. Invincible. He got that offense finally.
Mr. Unlimited.
There you go. I'm not going to remember that shit. Sean McDermott, I think, of the Bills, basically starting from scratch. They're putting all their money, all their eggs in the basket for Josh Allen, and Josh Allen's taking it up another step. We are fucking special times to be watching these type of quarterbacks play, but he's done a phenomenal job. Dan Campbell, I would say, is also on that list. Jim Harbaugh, with the way he's turned around the Chargers, just believing, right? Just having that belief. I don't remember who on the Chargers, they interviewed somebody and they said, what's different about this year is that we just feel like there's something to fight for. And that was not the case beforehand, which is fucking mind boggling. Back to Dan Campbell. I can't remember who they picked up in free agency. They asked him like, what's the difference between, you know, being on the Lions and where he came from. And he says, even making a mistake in practice, they are on your ass. And I guess he's never been in a situation like that. Like, you know, like they just want you to get better, push yourselves, rah, 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 team. Like Detroit embodies everything about Dan Campbell. And, you know, they're fucking making everyone pay for it. Sean Payton is on that list as well. I got to give it up. It was hard to put his name on there, but Broncos don't have to make the playoffs. They don't have to do anything. They look really competitive. This team already has an identity now. They have a good foundation to build off for years to come. That's what you want to see in a young team, young quarterback. It doesn't matter. You know, wins at the end of the day, they can have 5 wins by the end of the year. They look really competitive and they're a tough out. And then last on that list is Jonathan Gannon. People made fun of him when he was hired as a coach of the Arizona Cardinals. They are looking tough this year, man. And I'm not a Murphy fan. Murphy fan. God damn it.
Kyle Murray, man. That one got you again, dude.
God damn. All fucking year.
You're not a fan. I get it. You don't even want to say his name.
Can't remember his name. It's like when I couldn't remember my sister's husband's name. I was like, tell Michael I said hi. His name is not Michael. Like, it was Matt. It was Matt. Said it wrong for 6 years. Jonathan Gannon, I think he's done a great job there too as well. They're playing really tough. I don't know, man. I like their chances of winning out the West. They're going to be a tough out. But, yeah, that's what I got. Jonathan Gannon, Sean Payton, Jim Harbaugh, Dan Campbell, Sean McDermott, and Mike Tomlin. I know it's kind of like a long list, but they're all doing great jobs.
Well, I'll say you listed a bunch of guys who aren't going to win the award because Dan Quinn is going to win the award right now with the Commanders.
Okay.
Because he took a 4-13 team over. They're going to win the NFC or, you know, make the playoffs, finish probably second in the NFC East. He's got the MVP, you know, the offense, are we talking offensive rookie of the year with Jaden Daniels. I'll also keep in mind with this award, how this award means almost next to nothing to show success. Let me read you off the list of the last several NFL coaches of the year.
Last year.
Does anyone know who the NFL coach of the year was last year?
Dude, I gave Aaron a quick call today and I couldn't remember.
Kevin Stefanski of the Cleveland Browns.
Okay.
Anyone know the year before that? Brian Daboll of the Giants.
Oh yeah.
No.
Well, it was a good year.
That makes sense.
He went to the playoffs.
It was a Giants.
Yeah. Year before that, Mike Vrabel. Okay. But got fired.
Out of a job.
Got fired 2 years later.
All three of these guys can be out of a job here. At the end.
Well, wait. I didn't get to 2020, 2021. Okay. Kevin Stefanski again. So a two-time coach of the year.
I don't think they got fired. I don't think so.
I don't know. 2019, 2020, John Harbaugh. Okay, good coach. My personal favorite in 2018, 2019, former Chicago Bears coach, Matt Nagy.
How did he win that, actually?
The Bears were on a run.
The Bears won like 12 games, right? Did they win 12 or 13
games?
13 games.
Yeah. 13 games.
Who's the quarterback?
So that was Mr. Trubisky. So going
Trubisky
back to
still backing up Josh Allen in Buffalo? Is he still there?
He is. Okay. He is. Yeah. So going back to some of the years, 2016 to 2017, Jason Garrett won. Ron Rivera with
Jason
the Carolina
Garrett.
Panthers has won this reward 2 years in Carolina. So just to go overall, it's not going to be your best coach. So Andy Reid and some of these guys' best record. I think they're going to look for a turnaround. That's generally what this word's going to say. So I think, you know, you mentioned Jonathan Gannon, you know, maybe Peyton, but I think Peyton's won it before. I think you're looking at Dan Quinn and his turnaround job he's doing in Washington.
That's a valid point.
I mean, it does make sense based off that list that Jason
based on your
said,
list, it does
Dan
make
Quinn,
sense, actually.
Plus
yeah.
Dan Quinn in Washington beat Jonathan Gannon in Arizona. I think I want to add a name to that mix that everybody seems to have forgot about. Kevin O'Connell with the Minnesota Vikings. 8-2 Minnesota.
I did think about it.
We've looked at them coming into the year probably a 5-12, 6-11 team, given how tough their schedule was, and with Sam Darnold. I like to throw him in the mix, but I mean, Dan Quinn does make a lot of sense based off Kevin Stefanski winning the award twice.
By the way, you guys jumped.
Kevin O'Connell is number two on DraftKings Sportsbook right now.
Yeah, you guys jumped off the Vikings bandwagon after that first two-game loss, losing streak, and they've won three games since then, I think. Totally forgot about the Vikings. Good point. Awesome. Anything you guys want to add? Any other games you guys want to cover NFL-wise? think we covered everything, right? More or less.
We covered the good games.
The good games. So I didn't even watch the Raiders Dolphins game.
Yeah.
I didn't know they won.
Brown Saints, I didn't watch that one.
I didn't watch that one either.
Yeah, you say Kevin. Oh, I want to, before we get off NFL, Rome, I want to hear your top eight and your coaches that are on the hot seat, man. Your top five coaches on the hot seat before we go over to college football.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, you know what?
Why don't we take a little break and then come back. And we'll come back with Rome's top eight and top five coaches on the hot seat.
Sounds good. I like it. Let's take a quick break. All right. So we haven't done a hot coach edition in a while. You need to get like some flame sound effects right now.
You said hot coach.
You should be hot seat. Damn it.
I mean, this is a different ranking we haven't heard before, so.
Yeah, I'm really interested now to hear this one.
I'm going to do a separate podcast to be called Gay Center. We go gay sports takes. Son of a bitch, man. It's not my day. It's not my day to talk. There's a T.
Three, two, one. Go.
All right. We haven't done hot coach's seat in a while. Hell, I think like since like week three or four, something like that. So we've already had two firings, Robert Saleh, which that was a big fucking mistake. Kind of reminds me of when I said the Bucks should have fired their coach, and that was a big mistake. Now look at them floundering with Doc Rivers. That's probably the equivalent, right? Maybe something similar, maybe not so much. I don't know. And then I don't even remember who the coach was at the Saints. That's how sorry he
Dennis
was.
Allen.
We don't have. He's not coaching an NFL team again. We need to know his name. It's gone. It's away from in the history books, but he's already gone too.
There's already a second gig anyways. He started with the Raiders back in the day, so.
Yeah, and you know, he was number one when the season started, so the fact that he got those two amazing weeks, they kind of delayed it by 7 weeks. All right, so I think we should go with the hottest of the seats. It's obviously Doug Peterson. He knows it. We all know it. Ownership knows it. I'm surprised he hasn't been fired already after that ass whooping this past week. Like, they didn't even show up. I thought Mac Jones might provide some type of spark. By the way, how much were we talking about Mac Jones like just a few years ago? Like, that he might be like the next franchise quarterback for the Patriots. Now, look at him. You know, I don't know.
I don't think anyone in New England thought after five games in that he was the franchise quarterback.
They loved him. It was not till year two. That they don't like.
Well, he got into his playoffs his rookie year.
Yeah,
second
yeah,
year?
Yeah, and a Pro Bowl.
Listen, I went to a Bears game in Foxborough.
Did you
two years ago at this God, point? That's yeah, awesome. Where they were chanting for Bailey Zappi
already.
So,
yeah, that was that Monday night game. Shit, I remember that
Monday night game. I was in attendance. That was one of the few Bears wins that season before they got the first overall pick, and I saw that live. And yeah, my cousin, the Patriots fan, shout out to my cousin Brad. I think he listens to the pod.
What's up, Brad?
He was not happy. Although he got his revenge this year when the Patriots beat the Bears 2 weeks ago. So. But yeah, the Mac Jones experiments was over when they're chanting for Zappy in the second quarter.
Patriots victories this year have been like coach killers, season killers. If you lose to them or the Carolina Panthers, it's like your season's done. You know, yeah. So Doug Peterson, he's number one.
You're right, Rome. You're right though. Why isn't he not fired yet? They're in a bye week right now. Yeah. He should have been.
Are they?
Yeah, they're on the bye. So this is the week where you point at and like we're firing the coach.
That's kind of weird. Maybe they're just going to wait now till the end of the year. They're like, fuck it, why not?
Yeah, Jacksonville doesn't like to fire coaches in season. I mean, Urban Meyer just got caught out at a bar that one night with a chick sitting on his lap, so they kind of had to at 1-13.
You know what? It's hard for me to look at Urban Meyer now. Like, I don't know. There's just a lot of things
big
about
game.
Him.
Was he on Big Fox Noon or whatever? Big Game Noon, whatever it's called now?
Not too crazy.
Big
Noon Saturday. Sounds like a strip bar. Big Noon Saturday, right?
That's why Urban Meyer's on it, dude.
Doug Peterson, yeah, number one. Number two, I'm going to say, is Zach Taylor. We've already talked about it. I mentioned this early in the season that he was on the hot seat. You guys said, oh, no way. You know, he took them to a AFC Championship game, a Super Bowl. Well, you know, no one gives a shit anymore because Joe Burrow's playing lights out. MVP if they were winning, right? This guy would be leading the MVP race. Looks good. Throws the ball good. Probably has a hot girlfriend. This guy's living life. Macaulay Culkin 2.0. He has Ja'Marr Chase. He's playing lights out. And what they have to show for it. They have a Ferrari, and they keep on crashing it outside the turn. For me, he has to go. He will definitely be gone by the end of the season, right?
I will disagree with you there. How many years was Marvin Lewis the head coach of this team?
20. About 20 years, I think, right?
Okay.
And then you guys had Lovie Smith.
The Bengals are one of the most notorious cheap franchises of all time. Like, they invest no money in the infrastructure of, like, scouting and things like that. So their ownership group is not going to pay some dead money for a head coach when they barely missed the playoffs last year. They had it, you know, they went to the Super Bowl a few years ago. This is a team that has a legacy of not being great. And I just don't know if they're going to make the move on, to be honest with you.
Rome, I was with Jason on this one early in the year. I've now jumped on your bandwagon. Zach Taylor has to go. This team right now, over the last, since getting to the AFC Championship game, they didn't make the playoffs last year. I know Burrow got hurt, but they weren't trending in the right direction then. They kind of got hot towards the back second half of the season with the backup quarterback, but didn't make the playoffs. This season's been a disaster. They've, 1-4, I believe, at home, 1-5. Got terrible losses against the Patriots of all teams. This organization, this team under Zach Taylor, offensively, defensively, special teams used to be a bright spot for them. They're trending backwards. They're wasting away the best years of Burrow. Ja'Marr Chase, they got to get him paid. T. Higgins is going to walk in free agency. They've got to make a change, in my opinion.
Especially when you have Burrow. He's been injured his first year. Came back, they went to the Super Bowl. Injured again. Came back, you know, they're in contention for Super Bowl. Missed last year. They don't make the playoffs. Like, it's like every other year for Joe Burrow so far. Lights out when he's on. The team sucks when he's not. That's when you know, like, Joe Burrow is really good. But he's really good this year, and they're just not overcoming anything. In no particular order, because I just think, like, they're not really hot seats. I think, like, they're warm, right? Eberflus, I know you think it's hot. I don't think it's that hot, to be honest with you. I just don't get that feeling at all. I know Chicago fans, based on my Instagram feed and X, it's hot in Chicago. But I think, like, upstairs and everywhere else, I thought they, you know, it's warm. I think that might be number three on the list, actually.
Eberflus
might
be number three. This is what, Eberflus' third year?
This is his third year. And if he don't make the playoffs, it'd be his third year without going to the playoffs.
So
you're firing,
I think that's
okay. You're firing Zach Taylor for after going to the AFC Championship game and missing the playoffs 2 years in a row and going to the Super Bowl. But you're telling me an organization shouldn't fire someone after three losing seasons?
I don't think three is enough, actually.
Eberflus has got to go. I saw a stat Sunday on one of the games we were watching. They showed like seven coaches that were all hired within the same time as Eberflus. Eberflus has the worst record, and of the other coaches that were fired had a better record than him, and he has the worst record not to get fired. He's only won like 14 or 15 games in his 3 years there.
Yeah, pretty bad. I think the biggest indictment on Eberflus is the fact that he still wanted to keep Shane Waldron, you know, connected to the organization. Like, come on, dude. Like, the fact that they kind of forced his hand on that one to get rid of him, and now look at them. He's not head coaching material, but yeah, number three on the list. All right, let's just say it's Eberflus. Everybody else, though, they're going to probably get fired or let go or whatnot if things don't go the right way. Nick Sirianni, they have to make a deep playoff run. If they don't, he's out. That's just the way the Eagles roll. They're already tired of his antics. This guy's fucking one screw too loose. This guy's fucking crazy. I like it, though. I kind of like it. Like, they're fucking, you know?
And I think the best thing for the Eagles is Sirianni's been pretty quiet for the last month. And they're 4-0 during that time. I haven't
winning
heard a
peep does
out of
that.
Him.
Winning cures a lot of that noise. Of yeah. He's been still making comments in the media, but the fact that they're winning, no one gives a shit. That's how Philly is. But once they start losing, or if they lose like a bad game, if they get blown out in the playoffs, he's out. Jerod Mayo, I don't think it's the right hire for the Pats. I think that seat, I think they do a quick switch. They got the right quarterback. I don't think the rest of the coaching staff is the right one. Make a switch out now. Antonio Pierce, I think that's a bad hire. You got to start fresh again. You got Tom Brady. You know, I don't think Tom Brady does announcing after this year, by the way. I think he steps full time into the front office for the Raiders, and he turns that organization around. They do a clean sweep and build it from the ground up. Bowers, by the way, your guy, Aaron. I read somewhere
that's the only
like,
guy they got on offense, man.
Solid, breaking record numbers.
I watched the game against the Dolphins, and every fucking third down they threw it to Bowers. I'm like, fuck, get two guys on him. Come on,
he's money. I don't know who's your tight end guy, Jason, that you've always wanted to play, but he doesn't get any points or anything like that.
Kyle Pitts, Atlanta Falcons.
There you go. That's who Bowers is. That's who you wanted Kyle Pitts to be. That's Bowers. So draft him next year. So Antonio Pierce got to go. He's not. It's not a hot seat. It's just he's just not it. He's just not it. It's way over his head. McCarthy. It's just a bad year. It's a down year. Bad luck. Injuries. Now your $40 million quarterback, whatever he is, he's out. I don't think it's
60,
hot.
60 million.
60, it's even worse. You know, he's out. And then I'm going to add Kyle Shanahan on the list as well. I know he won't get fired, but I've been saying years ago that he should have been fired. Like, this is like, it's just like pressure breaks pipes. This guy's play calling, this guy's attitude in the fourth quarter of any close game. Look how many blown games he's had this year. It's terrible. If I was a GM, which I'm not, I would have fired him 3 years ago.
I want to get rid of Shanahan. But I think the issues has been their defensive coordinator since they lost Sala and D'Amico. They haven't really replaced that position.
Yeah, this past year has been pretty bad. Yeah.
Yeah, I hear that a ton from people that I know that are Niners fans as well, too, that he needs to go, please fire him. And then I would be advocating Chicago like ahead of anyone to hire this man. So this is the ultimate in privilege when you have somebody like that running your team that, oh, I consistently get you to the playoffs in the NFC championship game, but that's just not good enough for you. I know my team just doesn't make the playoffs. So this was talking through. But like, so someone said this on Twitter. I'm sorry. I don't know who to reference this to. But someone said the Shanahan 49ers has all the makings of Andy Reid in Philadelphia. Go ahead and fire this guy. Let him go somewhere else and then win a bunch of Super Bowls, because that's what would happen. And because I agree with Aaron, you thought Benson Sala, D'Amico Ryans, what the Niners do as an organization and how well they are run is they develop coaches to replenish draft picks to continue to get people out there. And that's an undersold thing of how you do things with talent development within an organization, because you have coaching and executives that's wanted by other teams that you get free draft capital for. So I can trade a second round pick at the trade deadline to go get such and such because my such and such coordinator is going to get hired and I'm going to get reimbursed. So, you know, it has its downfalls like Aaron's talking through. But yeah, please 49ers fire Shanahan. Some organization will be willing to pick him up right away.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I mean, getting rid of Kyle Shanahan would be stupid. He'd be stupid. There'd be 10 teams this year rolling out the red carpet to get him. You put the Bears on there. I mean, for sure, if he's on there, Zach Taylor's out the door right away. I mean, I'd get him on a jet out of there. Kyle Shanahan with Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase.
Oh, dude, that would be
money.
And
that running game.
Oh, my God, that'd be beautiful.
And then you want this 49ers? Yeah,
yeah, I mean, but it's... when it came down to a fourth quarter Super Bowl, he still has to win it.
He does, but I just – when you – there is a difference right there at the end, but you're getting to the, you know, you're getting to this moment every year. There's very few coaches getting there. I was like, it'd be the same thing you talking about Tomlin at this point, because, hey, when's the last time the Steelers have done the Super Bowl run right now? Like, there's people calling for Tomlin's job.
Oh, they were talking about it last year.
Yeah, which, okay, great. Yeah, but people be lining up to take Tomlin. So, yeah, like, sure. You want to be happier than happy a lot of times with these coaches. But let me a few things in a couple of these other coaches' rooms. So you mentioned Jerod Mayo. Disagree on that one, because I want you to think organizationally on this. Organization had Bill Belichick for 20-plus years. They had a handpicked successor from a guy they went in. This is somebody that the Kraft family is not going to give up after 1 year. They saw something in this guy. They're going to see it out. It's not going to be a one and done from there. Now, on the flip side, the Raiders, they're an organization that just fires their coaches at will all the time. So totally see the Antonio Pierce. And then going back to the Bengals, I saw if Zach Taylor was to get fired, I saw Ben Johnson being linked to that job too. And you even bringing up Shanahan right now. I still have skepticism on this organization, Minson. They're perennial. How much I'm willing to spend on a head coach stuff, because even when they hired Zach Taylor, hey, this guy was just the, you know, a coordinator QB coach for the Rams at that time. You know, are they going to go out and pay for a guy, when, especially Ben Johnson, who, hey, he's waiting for the right opportunity, and rumors were he's looking for a huge payday on that too. So the organization's there. I don't know if the Bengals are that team.
That would make a lot of sense, though. Johnson on the Bengals. Fuck.
I mean, it would. I mean, the Raiders, I think I talked about it last week, Pierce move off him. We talked about, you know, Shadir Sanders. Does he go to the Cowboys? Does he end up with the Raiders? Does Deion follow suit? There's already rumors being spread out there that Deion is available. He's kind of shut those down, but he's available for the right team, whether it's college or NFL. He's out there. He's already said he's going to intervene in his son and in Hunter's team that drafts him. He's going to pull a little like Eli and his father. So the Raiders, Pierce, they're done. How many games are they going to win? What pick are they going to get in the draft? That's a good question. So, I mean, Ben Johnson, the Raiders, I think, would pay up for him. Cincinnati, like Jason mentioned, doesn't pay a lot. The Giants, kind of a team that doesn't pay a lot. The Jets might, but who wants to go to the Jets in that dysfunction? Ben Johnson's going to be real selective. Kind of looked like he was looking at Seattle, Washington as two finalists last year, and didn't pull the trigger on it because he didn't like Washington's management group or how they handled the interview of him. And then Washington tried to talk shit afterwards about his interviewing process. But there's going to be at least a quarter of the league with the spots open for sure.
For sure. You mentioned the Jets. Woody Johnson takes that job overseas. Then that looks like a lot better situation. You guys kind of caught me off guard with the hot seat, so I want to throw all the names that are kind of like in the peripheral of that. But yeah, I think we're good. Yeah.
I would throw on there. You haven't thrown him on there. And I hadn't realized he'd won Coach of the Year two times over the last five years. But Kevin Stefanski in Cleveland. Honestly, I think he wants out. He won't publicly say it. But that team and that ownership group talk about dysfunction. That's a spot he would want to get out of, and he's a good coach. He could get a job somewhere else for sure.
For sure, yeah. Cool. Power 8. This is we got some changes at the top of my new Power 8 rankings. We did have a team drop out, and that team that dropped out is the Commanders. They were at number 6 last week.
I was going to say the Chiefs for a second.
I was just going to ask, did the Chiefs fall out because they lost the game?
You know,
if Rome's Power 8 would be like the college football rankings, you lose, you go from 1 to 15.
You know, I've been putting the Chiefs a lot higher than I wanted to. It's kind of like a compromise between what everyone else thinks and what I really think. But I'm also counting that I might be a little slightly biased, but, you know, stats with my background back in the day. But yeah, Commanders didn't make the list. I know they were on a bye week. It's just that the performances from the other teams were just that more convincing. So number 8, for the first time on the list all year long, we have the Los Angeles Chargers. Big win, big culture shift. You can feel it. The vibes are there. Harbaugh's exciting. He's making the rounds on social media. Guys are talking about just the energy he brings day in and day out. They believe that they can win that game yesterday or Monday or Sunday, whenever it was. what's today? But number 8 on the list, Chargers. I think they are, Aaron, as you mentioned, a potential contender. They just need to win one more game, and they're going to hit my over for the preseason pick. So I'm really happy about that. Number 7, going up a spot from 8, is the Houston Texans. They were kind of floundering a little bit, but very convincing win this past week. They got Joe Mixon. Man, if the Bengals would have had Mixon, how formidable would they be looking right now? Big fucking loss on their part. Big pickup on the Texans. They don't have Stephon Diggs right now. That's a tough loss. I don't know if they're Super Bowl contenders without that. You know, they do have some guys out, but they're at least going to make some noise from here on out to the rest of the year. That's number 7. 6, the Baltimore Ravens. They were at number 2 in last week's rankings. Tough loss against the Steelers. I think they're one of the 3 best teams overall in the NFL to contend for the Super Bowl. They have all the pieces to do it. It's just that when Harbaugh, Jackson, when they face their foes, whether it's like the Chiefs or the Steelers, they just get away from their game plan. We've seen it throughout the years in the playoffs. Will they do that again? That kind of scares me. Does Tucker even have a foot left to fucking kick them through to another victory or two? I don't know, but we dropped down to the six, still formidable. I think that's still respectful for week 11. Number five, they dropped down just one ranking. I didn't have them too high. They were four last week. This is the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, I don't like them. I don't think they're very good. Honestly, I would put them at like number 10 if I could, but they're still pulling out victories, right? They still know how to win. Mahomes, if you want to view him as the best quarterback in the NFL, although this might not be his best year, but they still have Andy Reid, who might be the best coach in the NFL still. That's the big difference. And plus they got, I think, possibly one of the best defensive coordinators as well. So Chiefs stay on in the top five. Moving up a couple spots, I have the Philadelphia Eagles. They're flying high, baby, and I believe in them. With Saquon, with Jalen Hurts, as long as he's not turning the ball over, they're formidable. I think they had a convincing win enough to move up a little bit. Number three is my Pittsburgh Steelers. They made the rankings for the first time last week at number five after that win against the Commanders. Another big ballsy win. Russell Wilson did not have a big game. They still did the intangibles. TJ Watt and the rest of the defense were to be reckoned with. They came in the clutch. Really big win. Starting to integrate Fields again. I think that kind of adds like a nice little ripple into their offense. I'm digging it. I feel good about the Steelers team. I think, you know, if the cards land right, they can compete for a Super Bowl. We'll see. Number two is the Buffalo Bills. Josh Allen, everything that we talked about them already, they came out to play. It was a very convincing win against the Chiefs, but it is regular season, right, Jason? It doesn't really count until we go to the playoffs. We'll see what happens. We got to think that they might see each other again in the playoffs, and I'm really looking forward to it. Hopefully Bills can get home field advantage because it'll be like snowing. It'll be great. You know, Josh Allen bringing it home, avenging that loss from a few years ago. I would love to see that, but we'll see. Bills at number two. And still at number one, the Detroit Lions. Just, I imagine once the Bears get good, you know, like Detroit is releasing like 20 to 30 years of heartbreak, of bad teams, of tough playoff losses, good quarterbacks or good players, but just missing the ball and not going deep far enough. They had Sanders. They had Stafford. Who else have they had? They had Megatron. You know, just Megatron. Elite guys, fun offenses, fun teams, right? Just always falling up short. Talk about heartbreak. Jason, I think your wife made the right decision in marrying a Chicago Bears fan because you're going to stay loyal, you know, till the end of time. Smart, smart fucking move. Ladies, find yourself a Chicago Bear fan or even a Detroit Lions fan. They're going to stick around through times thick and thin. I think that's the way to go.
The question is, what team does she like? You're saying Jason's sticking around, but you didn't say about you
what
know,
team does
her
she like,
sticking
actually,
around.
That's a good question.
She likes the Bears through marriage at this point. So.
That's good, man. That's good.
That's good. That's good. What was her real team, though?
She doesn't have one. She didn't. Cool. It was, you know.
Yeah, support. Love it.
She loves Brian Urlacher, though. That was her guy, you know, she'll rock the Urlacher jersey, you know.
That's pretty cool, actually. Yeah, Bears have been filled with talent throughout the years, too. Yeah. So, Lions, I got sick and tired of putting the Lions pitchers on the Power 8 rankings, so I went with a Josh Allen tiptoeing away from the Kansas City defense, so that'll be on the graphic, post up on the socials. But that's it. 8, Chargers, 7, Texans, 6, Ravens, 5, Chiefs, 4, Eagles, 3, Steelers, 2, Bills, number 1, the Detroit Lions.
So the 8-2 Vikings, not on the top 8, huh?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, no. When did we drop them out of the list, actually? It was 2 weeks ago. They were number 8. I know they won. And
they've had some ugly wins, man.
You guys were talking shit on them, right? Like, oh, you know, Sam Darnold. I was like, hey, fucking relax. You know, I'm all staking up for these guys. But, you know, they've been winning despite playing pretty some ugly, questionable football. More or less like the Chiefs. It's just, it's a lot uglier. They don't have anyone sexy, right? So, I don't know. I'm not really convinced of them. They have a great record. We'll see how it goes. Maybe they make a comeback on the list next week. I don't know. It's going to take a big win.
I like the top eight, Rome.
Top eight. Good top eight.
I'm feeling pretty good. Some of the teams that I considered were the Arizona Cardinals. If you notice, it's six AFC teams and just two NFC teams. All right. Any last thoughts, comments?
I'm good on the NFL.
All right. We're good. This was a hell of a long NFL section, but I think it was much needed. It was a fun week. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, review Aaron's college games from last week and some college football playoffs. All right. We'll end the show with some college football talk and review that Netflix special, Netflix's foray into live sports, which wasn't an abomination.
Good, wasn't good, man.
It was not
the
good.
The picture quality, I was like, when is this, man?
You know what? Let's talk about that real quick because I'd just rather just get that, you know, get it out of the way. I'm on my way back from LA picking up my daughter. We stopped by Will and Bonnie's house. These are like the 49er fans, the older couple that I'm friends with.
Did they go to the game? Because you said they weren't going to go, right?
They didn't go, which, you know, probably the right move. They would have been even more down and out. But I totally forgot about the fight on Netflix. The son, he's our age, he puts on Netflix. I'm like, oh, cool, let's watch the fight. I'm really excited. Really good fights on the card leading up to the Tyson fight. I can't remember the woman fight, though. If you guys want to pull it up real quick.
Yeah, it was Amanda Serrano versus Taylor's the last thing. Katie Taylor.
Serrano
versus Katie Taylor. So yeah. I think it's the most viewed women's fight in history, too, based on the number of views because of the overall stream of that fight, too.
See, I didn't know too much about them, but apparently this is like a rematch. This is a title fight. And then when I was like on X, I found out like this was a pretty big purse. They walked away with like $6 million each. I didn't even know women fighters made that much. But I was pretty impressed. That was like one of the best fights I've seen in years. Like, for UFC, for boxing, it was really intense. Taylor, it was alluded that she fights kind of dirty. She has a reputation of using her big head to rub against the other fighters' heads and like cutting them. I guess there's like, it's a big trail of evidence there. And Serrano got cut really badly. At first, I'm thinking like, okay, you know, like that's a pretty big gash. But then it just started hanging and hanging and hanging. It looked like it was flipped over like some like flap steak meat, you know, carne asada about to hit the grill. It was disgusting. Lots of blood. And it looked like a couple times she almost was like seconds away from getting a knockout. And Taylor did a good job of holding on or pressing or doing like another headbutt to kind of delay it, buying some time. So we went the full, 10 rounds. And I think she got robbed. I think the consensus on X was she got robbed. But overall, though, if they fight again, if there's like more women boxing like that, I'm in. I miss boxing. And that was the epitome of like what boxing was. It was phenomenal. And give it up to like the girls, man. Girl boxers, they put it all in the line compared to heavyweight fights. God. The fight before the women, too, that was really good. I only caught like half of it, but the Tyson Paul fight, I seen the workout videos of Mike Tyson. He looking pretty good for a 58-year-old. I saw the workout videos for Paul. I'm thinking like, I think everyone wanted to see Tyson come out with like a knockout. They wanted him to come out and at least like put a pretty good fight and put maybe Paul in his place. But right from the get-go, it was just like Tyson had no legs besides like a little burst after like 10 seconds. That was it in the first round. And he looked exhausted. He was biting his glove the whole time. Looked like he was just avoiding it. And honestly, it looked like Jake Paul could have done more. We're now recording this like after the weekend. And I've heard, you know, from like the radio stations and like other podcasts, like was Jake Paul kind of holding back to not knock out Mike Tyson just because it's an older, that's like your hero, right? That's like everyone's boxing hero. I'm not saying it's rigged, but it was kind of rigged. But what do you expect, though, either, too? Like, a lot of people were disappointed, but, yeah, Father Time doesn't lose. He was 58 years old. He looked 58. He looked like he was in shape, you know? And that in itself is pretty impressive. He almost died 6 months ago. But that fight aside, I couldn't tell if Mike Tyson was, like, frozen or if that was, like, the Netflix feed. Because the feed at my friend Will and Bonnie's house, that froze several times, and thinking like, I don't know what happened. Like, they had to like sign back in several times, and I had to show them like, no, rest of Twitter saying the same thing. Netflix can't handle this amount of streamers right now. It's not good. And then you hear stories how people are watching on their phone while they have like a 70-inch TV in their house that can't even get internet connection. It was just a bad foray into live sports. And well, fuck, dude, they got a doubleheader on Christmas. My Steelers are on Christmas. I'm going to be pissed if it's buffering midway when Russell Wilson's throwing it to Pickett for like a win, and I'm not going to be able to see it.
Well, I think the good thing for you, I didn't see the total numbers, but I was looking at just the women's fight because you started with that. And so over 50 million people globally watched that women's fight. So it was the most viewed women's sporting event in history from what the promoters are saying with the 50 million. So for you, for the Steelers, I don't think 50 million people are watching Steelers on Christmas Day. So at least there's going to be some people off the server for that. But yeah, I going starting with the women's fight, and you talk about the best of boxing out there is, you know, with Taylor and Serrano, we're out there, you know, putting on an entertaining show. But then you go to always the question in boxing, and I'll never forget, I was at Aaron's house and we watched the De La Hoya Mayweather fight. And then one of the judges like basically gifted one of the decisions to De La Hoya in that fight, and it was a Golden Boys production and stuff like that. What was that like? I mean, that was like 18 years ago or something at this point, Aaron, thinking about where that was. But like, that's what boxing is. And when you look at like the CompuBox stats and everything that came in from this fight, you know, Aaron, you know, talked about, I think before we started recording at this point, but like, yeah, Serrano landed 324 punches to Taylor's 217. Taylor was deducted a point and still won the fight. So just like when you're looking at the way these things are scored, this is what people hate about boxing. So you had a great fight. The decision is totally wrong that everyone's watching. And now you go to the main event, which is, you know, I am a huge wrestling fan. So we'll get that out of the way. We're going to talk wrestling more as we go on here. But there's nothing about this that wasn't just a wrestling pay-per-view that the event was predetermined. Starting from the entrances that they want, it's WWE adjacent, you know, with the, you know, I'm riding a low rider with entrance music and a whole show. So it's, I mean, the production quality is not on the level of WWE because WrestleMania is giving you a way better type of entrance that is, but it's a step down in what you're trying to give you. And when you look at boxing or even MMA sometimes, like, they want to sell the drama and stuff like that. But when it comes to live sports, it's not always going to be like that. And you mentioned how Tyson looked. His legs were shot. He couldn't move his feet. And I don't know if people are questioning that Jake Paul was holding back. He 100% was. They weren't doing anything towards the end of the fight. I mean, there's screenshots at a certain point that it looks like Tyson got one in that it almost looked like, hey, we're going a little too hard here at this point. Like early in the fight, like Tyson was coming out trying to do something. So it was a payday. People got paid. To your point, I don't know what people were expecting out of this fight. They were trying to relive, and I say they as in, you know, the mass audiences of people our age and older who Tyson was their guy growing up, you know, maybe the last big boxing draw that's going to be out there. And they wanted to see something that wasn't that possible. And, you know, the post game was like nailed depressing it. Where he was, you know, they're asking Tyson, are we going to get another fight? And he's not trying to sell it, but like, no, man, like nobody wants to see you in the ring. And then he puts out on Twitter that he nearly died 6 months ago and needed a blood transfusion and all this stuff. It's like, how did he even get approved to fight 6 months after almost dying at this point? The whole thing was a joke. And I'll pair this to wrestling. Like I love wrestling because the theater and the athleticism and what's able to go. But when boxing and MMA don't do their stuff and they try to get too much into the entertainment side of what wrestling is, and they're not delivering on what the core of the competition is, this is where people think your sport is a joke. And that's what boxing in a lot of ways has become, because the only way people are watching boxing fights is when it is a spectacle like this that is a joke and not really like, hey, who's the two best pound for pound fighters in the world? Because I couldn't name them right now, because the only time it gets our attention is a joke fest like this.
You're absolutely right, man. You nailed it. I know that's why Aaron doesn't watch boxing. This guy was a huge boxing guy, and he won't watch anymore. I like boxing. Like, I think everyone's craving for boxing to be good again, but it's so convoluted. It's so skewed. It's so polluted. They don't have the best fighters fight ever. It's a lot of politics to it, money, bullshit. Look at Canelo. He hasn't even fought the best boxer in like fucking years, right? And then Mike Tyson, I didn't even know he almost died. That was a good point. The fact that he almost died 6 months ago, he lost all his blood, but yet this thing is still sanctioned. He's boxing 6 months afterwards. Like, I'm still recovering from my divorce from 4 years ago, you know? It's like a divorce of a lifetime. It kills a lot of guys, right? This is like terrible. Like, I don't know how they did it. It was an embarrassment for sure. By the way, the fight before Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano was Mario Barrios against Abel Ramos. You couldn't even tell who won that game. That game, the fight, it was a really good fight. It was a split draw, but really exciting. At least those two fights. I'm really glad I caught that because it made me miss boxing so much. But man, if someone can actually correct the sport and make it legitimate, I would totally fucking pay up the
price. Yeah, I mean, boxing again. Just, you know, like Jason, you guys said, it's become a joke, man. We talked about it on the pod last week. Jake Paul was a 2-1 favorite over Tyson. How he wasn't 20-1, beyond me. five and a half rounds. I told you that was going over on 2 minute rounds. Usually boxing fights with 10 ounce sanction gloves. These were 14. So you're basically fighting with pillows. The whole event was just like, it was a payday. You know, it's like, hey, Mike, you almost died. We're going to sanction it. We're not going to kill you. We're going to throw our punches WWE style, give you $20 million. And Tyson looked so bad. Like he couldn't even sell it to be a bad, you know, paid for prop fight where, hey, I'll throw two jabs, you throw an overhand right, and we go here, okay?
Dude, the fact that I forgot where I was going to go with this, but you know, they had Cedric the Entertainer, they had Jerry Jones, they had Michael Irving on like the desk, Rosario Dawson, is that her name? Or no, Rosie Perez. What the fuck is she doing commenting on a boxing thing? This whole thing was a fucking.
I will say Rosie Perez, massive boxing fan. I've heard her on other platforms where she's like old school boxer. She does know her stuff. I've seen her on other shows and stuff as a boxing kind of thing. So she knows some old school boxing stuff. But yeah, I mean the other stuff around the whole event. Like yeah, if this were pure WWE, man, you'd be getting Tyson some things, and WWE's gonna send you home happy. You know, Tyson would have won. And, you know, after having to do a valiant comeback, but at the end, no one was happy and it was over. But I'm sure that, you know, Jake Paul and some others are going to sucker us into some other fight. They talked about Canelo there at the end. That probably never happens because I'm sure there's some promoter that runs, you know, Canelo versus Paul and who's going to get a cut. And, you know, I probably get $30 million if I lose or win and I get the bigger purse. So this is why boxing's never going to get though with, you know, Aaron's going to talk about UFC a little while. I'm not the biggest UFC guy, but what you say about UFC is what Dana White does so well is that for the most part, he gets the best MMA fighters in the world and that puts matchups together and you see the best going best for, you know, the biggest prizes inside UFC for better or for worse. And I think that's what boxing is never going to get.
Yeah, I mean, UFC and Dana White have a business model that works. So you come in, you get a contract, this is your set pay. This is your purse, you win, you get double bonus. And you got to move yourself up the ranks. Boxing is just too many hands to feed, too many promoters. Hey, I want 65-35. Well, my fighter's better than you. Well, Jake Paul makes more people come watch the fight, so he should get 75%, even though he's only got 10 professional fights and only one against one legit guy. Tyson Fury's brother, who beat his ass, by the way. So, I mean, Jake Paul, I think, can fight, but he hasn't fought any fighters. And I'd love to see him fight Canelo. I think it'd be an entertaining fight. I would watch that fight. But instead, he's probably going to say, hey, give me another MMA fighter that's washed up, that doesn't box for a living, and then I'll knock him out because the guy's an armbar specialist instead of throwing overhand rights.
Yeah, I think they call that like Mayweather possibly. And it's like, dude, like quit calling everyone's grandpa to a fight, right? Just go fight someone your own age. I think the current heavyweight champion called him out and challenged him to a fight. I would totally love to see that kind of finally seeing an ass whooping. Otherwise, like Canelo, though, it's not really worth fighting someone like Jake Paul. Like, who knows, man? It's,
well, the thing is, you already got Jake Paul saying, you know, he's going to make more money than Canelo. He wants more money because he says, you know, he's a bigger draw.
Well, he is right now.
But that's why boxing's a joke, man. Nobody, you can basically be a YouTube guy, fight nobody, and fight a washed up Mike Tyson, have 60 million people watch on Netflix, like they said, garner the biggest purse ever of a non-MMA event in boxing, whatever it was, at the gate, and pin on the one of the shittiest fights of all time.
Mike Tyson couldn't even do a fake wrestling match.
I mean, the best thing Mike Tyson did was bite his gloves, like you mentioned, Rome. That was the most entertaining thing Mike Tyson did all night. I heard, like, you know, there was a free shot on his ass cracked at some point. I didn't see that, but I've been hearing about it.
Oh, dude, that was disgusting. That's great.
Well, I mean, the UFC puts on a way better show, man.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to watch it.
I mean, unfortunately for the UFC in the heavyweight fight, Stipe Miocic was washed up. He hadn't fought in 3.5 years. He was 42.
Yeah, big break.
Once great heavyweight champ. But John Jones destroyed him, you know, finished him with a spinning heel kick to the ribs. That shot hurt. I mean, nice I looked kick. At it. That shot hurt. Pin him down, and that was it. The fight before that, Michael Chandler versus Charles Oliveira, that was a great, entertaining fight. Oliveira was dominating 4 rounds. Chandler comes back in the 5th, almost finishes him, has him on his back, basically doing an old WWE kind of like, you know, suplex, get off my back twice while in a chokehold, crazy stuff. Overall, it was a good night, I think, for the UFC. I mean, of the main card, 3 of the 5 fights I thought were pretty entertaining. And like Jason said, I mean, the UFC, whether or not you like it or not, they do have some bad decisions. But for the most part, most people don't think it's rigged. You know, a lot of their fighters are underpaid. But if you can move yourself up the ranks, you are rewarded nicely. And, you know, the business model there, you know, isn't as great as boxing. That's why people want to go into boxing, because you can call out Jake Paul and make $10 million versus, hey, let me call out John Bones Jones and, hey, you don't qualify to fight this guy. You're just fucking good enough.
I would totally fight Jake Paul for $10
million. Yeah, I mean, that's where, because Francis Ngannou hasn't, I forgot who he fought like recently, but like, I mean, he's able to leave UFC. He was heavyweight champion, right, Aaron?
Yeah.
So and find a name for himself outside and do these kind of payday things. So, you know, it's not that's UFC's downfall, but I think from a strict business model standpoint, and people talk about fighter pay, like, you know, they have a certain structure who's within their organization. You know, they're going to get the biggest fights and put on matches. The hardest thing I think for UFC for me is as a super casual observer, like I started with UFC watching with Aaron, and it was Anderson Silva was top of his game. No one could beat this guy. And that now, last time I think I saw him, he was fighting Jake Paul and again, losing to him in a boxing match. So, but at UFC for me, it is hard for them to create stars, because once you create a star, they probably are going to lose and they go down very quickly. And you talk about, you know, the main event with Miocic and stuff like that. Like, yeah, these guys get past their prime. They lose quickly. They lose a lot of fights, and it's over for them. And so, you know, that's where, like, I'll say, like, you know, I love wrestling more, because you're gonna give me the Undertaker still out there at 55 years old putting on the show, and we could have a star for the next 20 years. Where UFC's got to keep making new guys coming up the pipeline and continually pushing them out.
I think the thing with the UFC and MMA as a whole is there's so many young and good fighters now, and the sport's grown in popularity that everybody's like training it now. Like, boxing used to get all these guys, they're now leaving boxing, because unless you got like a big name promoter or like you're just somehow can escape through, you can get in. Dana White, UFC, they got all these like contests, house shows, like, win a fight with Dana White, they put on promotions, and you go and fight like 3 fights in a month. You win this thing, you get a UFC contract. They have the Ultimate Fighter that's on like season 22, 25 that's been going on, that's aired on ESPN, where they get, you know, like famous coaches like McGregor and all these guys to coach a team for a while. But the UFC, man, it's tough, because you're fighting fighters, Brazilian, Chinese, Jamaican, all over the world now that have been training for 10, 15 years. And they don't just train wrestling. They don't just train jiu-jitsu, which if you were great at one thing like 10 years ago, you could dominate the sport.
Well, there's now
you have to be, you have to have wrestling, you have to have boxing, kickboxing, all this stuff. The UFC does have guys that become stars, but you know, usually the lifespan is short. You know, if you can defend your title half a dozen times, that's great. Jason mentioned Anderson Silva. I think he was what, 15-0 in the UFC. I mean, dude was on a tear.
I saw a signed poster of his when we went to...
And he was, I mean, I remember watching a fight. He was down 4 rounds to nothing with a minute to go in the fifth round against Chael Sonnen, getting ready to lose, and catches him in an arm triangle and taps him out. And everybody's just like, oh my God, this guy is invisible. And now he's fighting, you know, Julio Cesar Chavez, his junior kid, and Jake Paul. And, you know, it's just how it goes, man. I mean, Nate Diaz versus Jorge Masvidal, ex-MMA stars, were probably the last big boxing fight that I've watched in the last year. And that was actually a decent boxing fight for two MMA guys.
Cool. I guess we'll just take one more break and then we get back. We'll wrap it up with some college football.
Might as well, man.
Might as well. All right, we talked NFL, a lot of NFL. We even talked a little bit of MMA, some boxing. Let's wrap it up with some college football. Aaron gave us his 10 games of the week this past week. I think you were money on a lot of them, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, it was a good week for us in college football against the spread. I mean, we another winning week. I think we've won 7 of the last 8 weeks. I know, Rome, I think I told you earlier on the phone, NFL, best week of my life, NFL, 13-1 against the spread I was this week. 13-1. I mean, I'm going to document that because I don't think I could be that good again, even if I tried.
That's got to mean I was 1-13 then, because we were doing lines last week. I think we had opposite picks. So, man, I apologize if anyone took anything I said for my entertainment purposes only, because if Aaron was that good, I was really bad.
It's been mentioned before on the show. Jason's picks, take him with a grain of salt when he's in the Inland Empire, but when he's over there in the Peach State of Georgia... Dude's money. Dude is money.
more time to think, to do the research when you're out there in Georgia. You know, you get back home and just, you know, you don't just get the kind of time to give out quality, you know, advice.
Do they still have the liquor stores closed on Sunday?
I'll be honest, I don't know. Yeah. What, in California or Georgia you're talking about?
Georgia. Yeah. It was alcoholic out here. I already know that.
Yeah. Rome's in line right before they even open up. You know, he wants to make sure he gets the good stuff before he goes out.
Yeah. Well, let's
guys,
start
I'm
off.
Saying this isn't a shoe release, man. We just, you know, we always have the alcohol in stock here, you know?
Well, you know, we already know my UCLA lost, Nebraska lost. It wasn't that great of a weekend, actually, to be honest with you. Yeah. It is what it is. San Jose State, Boise State, hell of a game. We called it, and it was fucking phenomenal, but San Jose State fucked us.
Yeah, I mean, the score doesn't really say what the game was. That was a really good game.
That was great.
I mean, San Jose State was up 14-0 early.
Told you, Jason.
Had a chance to go up 21. You know, sources say that, you know, this pod was clip was shown to San Jose State's football team. We kind of got them motivated going in that game, a Friday night dinner.
Got hyped up.
Yeah, they got it worked up. They definitely were like, oh, Jason says we can't score. Oh, he says we can't upset Boise State. Shit.
21 points first quarter.
Let's go and do it. And they came out like gangbusters.
Yeah.
I even think there was a sign that said sources from the sofa up there among the many, many of fans that show up at the Spartan Stadium.
I will be going to some San Jose State basketball games later this year, the women's basketball team. Lots of talent there.
Okay.
Lots of talent. So quick little 45-minute drive for me. I got to start networking again. You know, I miss being on the college campus.
I've seen a big poster. Number 4 public school in California, San Jose State.
Is it really?
That's what they showed, big sign there at the football game. Don't know if it's true or not, but that was posted there.
I had a pop-up restaurant. I don't know if you knew, Jason. I had a pop-up restaurant down there. The Niners always came in because like, my menu was like very protein forward. I worked out still like fucking 3 hours a day. I'd be in the kitchen in the morning just pumping them out. But they used to come in, the 49ers players, because of my nachos, the steak nachos. Had a good pound and a half of meat. And then same thing, a lot of the San Jose, you know, athletics. It was pretty cool. But weird town, though. It's like kind of reminds me of Riverside before it became trendy, you know? Anyways, San Jose State, great game.
Well, it sounds like San Jose State needed some of your steak nachos there to finish it off in the second half, because, well, they did scare me, because out of all the things I've gotten wrong this year, Boise State's been the one thing that's been steadfast. And I was waiting for a text from one of the two of you at some point when Boise State was down 14-0.
I thought about it, actually.
I thought about it, but I couldn't hit sand. I just couldn't hit sand. But yeah, I mean, San Jose State was close. I mean, the only thing they're missing was Carnes Stallions. You got to remember the new coach there at San Jose State's the ex-Navy coach who gave Carnes Stallions his first gig. So, they might have had him on the sidelines. Might have been a different story.
Yeah.
But it was a good game. That was an exciting game.
Yeah, Boise State is not looking good down the stretch, I got to say. Not as sharp as they did at the beginning, but...
No, they've had some close games against UNLV, a week ago against Nevada. But, I mean, all they got to do is win out here at this point. You know, they have the close loss to Oregon against the number one team in the nation. And then, you know, overall have, you know, beaten Washington State. I think the end of the year against Oregon State, while Oregon State's not great, it is a former, you know, Power Five, you know, school, even though they're 4-6. So there's still some landmines here for Boise State, but went out, and based on this college football playoff ranking, they're going to get a first round bye.
Yeah, I don't understand that. Maybe you guys can explain that to me in a little bit.
But the bye schedule or what? Yeah. So the top four conference winners with the top ranking in the AP poll get the top seed. So since Boise State would be one of the teams that wins a conference, they jumped BYU. So they'd make that top four list, and BYU would be your fifth ranked highest conference champion right now.
So who gets left out? Tennessee?
Tennessee currently is outside looking in, yes.
Well, I told you Tennessee-Georgia was maybe an elimination game.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think the biggest thing for Boise State getting that bye is because the Big 12 is just devouring each other internally in the Big 12 conference. So, you know, BYU being, what are they, the 12 seed now, Aaron, as the head of the Big 12. So the Big 12 is basically any.
I'll release it right now. BYU is going to get beat this weekend.
Who they play?
All right.
At Arizona State. There's going to be a lot more shakeups coming in the Big 12, guys.
You know,
I think the top two teams, we'll talk about it later in the week, but they're both on upset alert.
Big 12 starting to turn into the Pac 12, where they just start cannibalizing each other's teams and no one's going to end up winning a championship. Congratulations. Basically. You guys fucked yourselves.
Well, I mean, besides Boise State, I will say overall this week, you know, some close calls in other games too. Oregon, you know, barely getting by out in Wisconsin was fairly close. So that was another close game. What else did we have on the schedule?
Texas barely got away from Arkansas.
Yeah, Texas. Clemson, you know, barely getting past. You know, Rome's Pittsburgh
now lost three in a row.
That was close. And then I don't know if we're jumping ahead, but as a Notre Dame fan, I just like to laugh at Florida beating LSU and Brian Kelly.
That one was for me. What happened in that game?
Florida's not bad, man. I mean, I don't know. Look, they laid an egg last week or the week before against Texas, but they didn't have that freshman quarterback, Legway. So once he plays, man, Florida's pretty good. They're not bad. They got Ole Miss coming in. That's going to be an interesting game this upcoming week. I mean, the upset of the week was Kansas, who I've been saying for a while was the best 2-6 team in the country, beat Iowa State. I say they were the best 3-6 team in the country. Then they beat BYU. This week coming up, they're going to be the best 4-6 team. And guess who they got coming up at home? Colorado.
Wow.
Tony, man, the Big 12, I think it's got some shakeups coming for sure. We haven't seen the last of that. And I've got BYU going down this week in Arizona State. Arizona State's going to get into that Big 12 championship game. Who their opponent's going to be, I don't know yet, but Arizona State's riding high. They had a big win this weekend at Kansas State, eliminating them. We didn't talk about that game. That wasn't on the games to watch list, but that was a big win for Arizona State at Kansas State.
So college football playoff right now, Aaron. I think we both agreed Big 10 and SEC both getting four in.
Looks that way.
So let's start with the Big 10. You got Oregon, the number one overall seed. Ohio State's at 5. Penn State's at 6. Indiana's at 7. Are all four of these teams getting in or is any of them going to be outside looking in?
Indiana, man, can't. We've been talking about it for weeks. They've got Ohio State. Can they put up a good performance? Can they win that game? You know, Tennessee, we mentioned, is on the outside looking in. That's an SEC team. They've played a lot of tougher opponents.
They've had a really tough schedule.
And their schedule's still going to be tough. Indiana hasn't played anybody.
Nobody.
Their toughest game was against Michigan. That's not saying much, though. Michigan put up a fight. Can they keep it competitive against Ohio State? I think the committee's definitely going to keep an eye on that. If they get ran out by like 30 points, I'd be worried if I'm Indiana. They lose by 10 or less, but it's good game. I think they're secure to get in.
Okay. So SEC, you got Texas, Bama, Georgia, Ole Miss. Who's not getting in out of those?
I think all of them get in, right?
Well, me and Jason have mentioned it. Texas has a big game coming up here at Kyle Field in a few weeks. To me, that's maybe a possible playoff elimination game. If A&M beats Texas, I would get Texas out of there. Texas has been not very good. They're kind of like the Atlanta Falcons of the NFL, overrated. If they play anybody good, they get whipped. If A&M beats them, Texas is out, A&M is in. A&M's only two losses would be against South Carolina, who nobody wants to play, and against Jason's Notre Dame team, who, if they win out, they're in.
When they win out.
We got Army this week?
Yeah, Army. Big matchup this week versus Army.
I mean, there's a lot riding here for Jason's, because, I mean, if Army wins, I mean, Notre Dame's out.
They're out.
And you're looking at probably Boise State getting knocked out, too, because I would have to move Army above Boise State as far as a non-group of five. If Army runs man, I would. I mean, that's a story right there, man.
No way.
Boise State's not looking good.
No. Boise State's not out. If Army beats Notre Dame, they take Notre Dame's spot in the playoff.
You think Boise State would move up that high? They'll get in over – it's
possible. Boise State's already up there. If they win out, they're getting in. They're not going to – like, once they've set this precedent of where you're at in the ranking, you know, they're not going to drop them out there. But, like, Notre Dame being this at-large bid right now as an independent, if they're going to lose their – if they lose the Army, Army spot is Notre Dame spot. It's an independent spot right there. Assuming Army goes undefeated, because I think they'd still – I don't know if they're going to play Navy. Can they still play Navy?
Yeah.
Do they have to play Navy twice because they might have to play them in the American Athletic Conference title game?
It is a possibility, yes.
So, I mean, they may cancel each other. I don't know.
I think, was it Tulane already secured a spot in that title game or no?
Yeah.
Because they whipped Navy 35-0, right?
Yeah, Tulane's in it. You are right. Yes. Army and Tulane is in.
Tulane's in that conference championship game.
That's already set.
I think Army's got to be in too because they're 7-0 in conference as well.
Yeah, I think that is set. But yeah, Army still has Notre Dame, Navy, and then Tulane. So yeah, I could see if Army runs the table, they would take Notre Dame's spot as that possible independent spot to get out. I mean, if Notre Dame were to lose against SC, possibility. I'm not ruling that out. SC made the switch at quarterback. It's kind of shaky to me, but maybe a little spark there. That won't be easy.
I'm rooting for UCLA to beat USC in a couple weeks.
That could happen too, man. USC plays these games where, like, they could go either way, but they're fun. You just don't know what's going to happen.
I need UCLA to beat USC and Fresno State to become bowl eligible.
Fresno State's a difficult task, too.
Yeah, that's why not happening. I don't know. I'm still kind of... This whole playoff format has kind of thrown me off, but...
It's not that hard, Rome. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, what makes it hard is who's going to come out of the Big 12 and who's going to come out of the ACC. Because Clemson's done with their conference schedule already. They're 7-1. Miami's, 5-1. SMU's, 6-0. So those teams really have to still win out to keep a higher ranking than Clemson, or Clemson could sneak into that conference championship game.
Yeah, there's a lot to play out. I know I've said it the last couple of weeks, so I won't keep... going on this point, but which two teams, especially in the Big Ten and SEC, are going to be in the conference title game? What are the teams not going to be in the conference title game, depending where their ranking is at? You know, is that favorable for them because they're not going to inherit this loss? How does the committee respond to a team that's, hey, it's a two-loss team in an SEC championship game. They lose, become a three-loss team. Do they still get into the playoff? Like, but the first year, there's a lot of things the committee is going to have to consider. And, you know, what kind of precedents we'll begin to start seeing too? Because, hey, if you get into your conference title game, is the committee going to say, hey, it's an automatic bid? Or is there going to be some stakes if you lose this conference title game that you can either have a first round bye or you're out completely?
Yeah, like what happens is like Alabama and Georgia lose again, right?
Like, yeah, I mean, that was question was mentioned to, I believe, the SEC commissioner. Said it actually benefits them, but I'm with Jason. I mean, I don't want to play in a conference championship game. I mean, if I was Oregon, I wouldn't have mind losing to Wisconsin, because then you get out of that, you get the 5 seed, and you get a home playoff game. I mean, to me, getting a home playoff game might be greater than a bye and playing on a neutral site. It's not like you get a bye and then a home playoff game. If you get 5, 6, 7, 8, you get a home playoff game.
Because right now we're looking at this. I made this argument before, like Indiana specifically, undefeated right now. Let's say they lose to Ohio State, but keep it relatively close. Now you're getting probably Ohio State, Oregon in the Big Ten championship game. Indiana's locked in. They're locked into a first round game. Doesn't matter for them, but Ohio State could lose. They're going to have a 2-loss both against Oregon or vice versa. Oregon loses to Ohio State. They got to play the extra game, you know, that, you know, either meant first round bye or not. But there's a lot that goes into these conference title games. I'm not the biggest fan of them because I don't think they give, you know, I don't think they give the proper stakes to the winner and the loser for how it's going to affect you in the playoffs when there's a bunch of teams out there that they can either skate by where it doesn't provide any advantage or is a big disservice.
Yeah, I think what they need to do is instead of giving like the ACC and the Big 12 an automatic bye if they win that conference championship, is actually pit the best 4 teams.
Yeah.
So if like Ohio State and Oregon played and Ohio State beat them by 3 points, they would have played twice and each one and won by less 3 points or less. To me, I would pit them as a top 4 seed each and give them a bye. But if Ohio State loses, they're probably going to be a 6 or 7, get a home game, but you know, you're not getting that bye that you probably should be, because Indiana just has to show out and play well. And they could sit back, relax, they're in. Penn State can't win a big game, and now James Franklin doesn't have to play a big game. He's thrilled as fuck right now. He's over here begging Ohio State to please beat Indiana, for God's sakes. In fact, he sent Indiana tips on how not to win. That's how bad he doesn't want Indiana to win. He doesn't want any part of Oregon in the fucking Big Ten championship game.
Man, that is a great take. Penn State's got Minnesota and Maryland coming up, and they're basically the win both of those. They're in, and there's pretty much no way they're probably playing in the Big Ten championship game at this point too. So
that's crazy. That's crazy. All right.
Yep.
Don't look now, but the Lakers are 10-4. Third place in the Western Conference.
Cavs lost tonight too.
And Cavs finally lost against the Boston Celtics. They were down by like 20 something points.
Cleveland was, right?
Cleveland was, yeah. And then they roared back and lost by a couple.
3 points, I think it was.
Roman said, don't look now. And I haven't looked. So, but the Emirates NBA Cup is going on right now. So, you know, just want to make sure everyone's aware of that.
Yeah, the games today, the Boston Celtics floor was really ugly.
Dude, was it all green and looked like shit?
It's disgusting. It looked like a bad, you know, I used to like Jell-O as a kid. And I try having Jell-O every once in a while. Every time I see it, I was like, oh, fuck yeah, Jell-O. Let's see if it's good. It's just always kind of weird. And Mexicans, they have like this weird Jell-O dessert where like it's Jell-O with like a whole bunch of like fruit inside. I just don't get it. And then they put like cream on top, like a sweet sour cream, which is even more fucking wild. But I don't know where I'm going with this, but it reminded me of that court, just like this green jello-y court, like this tanky sour green apple flavor, you know, and I could taste like the fake grapes or like, you know, grapes that are for some reason in a fucking jello, like this Mexican dessert that I'm thinking of. I don't know where I'm going with this. Man, I'm just tired. I was going pretty well. I think like doing a podcast on after I do like a fucking 12-hour drive has been beneficial, but now I'm starting to crash. I haven't had any caffeine.
This has been a long pod. We logged in on 8:24. I think we officially started.
How the hell did we make it this far? Yeah.
And it's almost a quarter to 11.
It was a big weekend. A lot going on. A lot of big weekends coming up.
We'll have a short pod this week anyways. We'll have a short one on Friday.
Fridays, yeah. It's just go over quick lines and get in, get out, right? Quick line or two and done.
Oh, yeah. Man. It's getting that drip already. Just kidding. I don't know what that is. Are we done?
I think so.
We're done, but you threw the Lakers out of nowhere. I'm like, man, are we going into an NBA talk right now?
I really want to. A lot of things have been happening in the NBA, and I've been kind of starting to watch it, although...
NBA after Thanksgiving, maybe right before Christmas, and then for sure in the new year.
I'm going to start doing NBA definitely, yeah, after Christmas, after Thanksgiving. Yeah, I think so. A little more.
The NBA specialists need to come on. Right now, they're occupied.
I don't want to cover the cup. I'm not going to cover the cup. The cup's pointless. It does nothing for the
it's
season.
An STD, bro.
It's a waste of time.
It is IST. It's an STD, man. I'm not interested in the cup.
Yeah.
I'm not going to disagree with Rome about being waste of time in the NBA Cup, but I will say this will take like a generation to catch on, and I hope the NBA sticks with it. Because there are some things American sports can learn about soccer. Like from soccer, and I do like in these type of sports to make everything except the NBA title. There's other things that could win throughout the year, and there's I think really value to like the soccer schedule where you're playing a team can be playing in multiple different competitions at a time, and I think there's some money to be made for the NBA. I think even the NHL at a certain point too, where you could be having different in-season competitions, you know, to kind of round out and gain more interest, because you think like the Inter Miami and MLS, they're pretty disappointed they didn't win the MLS Cup, but hey, they won like a domestic cup throughout the year. They won, you know, most points, which I think is a community shield or something like that. So there's different ways I think to garner interest that in our generation won't matter, but I think in future generations, this is how they can get along, especially as soccer becomes the second biggest sport in America in the next probably 15, 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a lot of stuff to unpack with basketball, but yeah, if I go into it, I'm going to end up doing like a Bill Simmons type of like 40-minute ramble. So I think we're did it already.
We'll cut that out and I'll save that. I'll regurgitate that take another time. Cause I got a lot to that take.
Cool. That does a wrap. Hell of a week. We'll be back on Friday. I think me and Aaron might do like a little college football recording on Thursday. We'll put it all together with Friday with Jason to go over NFL lines and bust out as soon as you can so you can make your bets before the weekend games. Peace.